honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. We're going to reconnect now with author Steve Ranson, one of the men who has written Legacies of the Silver State, Nevada Goes to War, a book that if you buy it, every penny will go to Honor Flight Nevada and a chance to send more deserving veterans to their memorials in Washington, D.C. Let's learn a little more about Steve's 28 years of service to our country.
Everything was during peacetime. Pretty much during the Cold War. I know people say, well, you know, Cold War, nothing much happened. But when you look back at the Cold War, it would just take one finger on a red button and all of us would pay the price, and just trying to keep the peace there. But I did spend 2 years in Panama in the mid-80s. You know, it was definitely at a time of the Cold War, Panama being the crossroads there with quite a few military installations at the time. Did I have an exciting time in Panama? For the most part, it was just pretty mundane. But on a 4th of July shoot, I was working with Southern Command Radio and TV Network. The commanding general came over and said, "Hi, guys, how's it going?" He said, "I'd like you to meet somebody, Manuel Noriega."
So where can I find that exclusive one-on-one interview with Noriega?
We didn't have an interview. It was just, "Hello, how are you doing?" I wish we could, but the general at the time says, "Okay, thank you guys," and just took him away. It would have been interesting. You know, at the time in the mid-80s, things weren't that tense between the U.S. and Panama, but it started to really become a little more tense several years after that, 1987-88, and I went back in 88 as part of the Nevada National Guard, and we unloaded our stuff at the hotel in downtown Panama because there wasn't any room in the barracks there in the canal zone, and we had several people who came up to us and asked if we were going to take care of Noriega.
You know, I was kidding about the one-on-one interview, but that it brings to mind maybe a different question, because in your work as a journalist, and I'm sure we could have a fascinating conversation about the state of journalism today and what stories should be told, but I'm sure you've met a lot of well-known people, a lot of quote-unquote important people. The work that you've been able to do now with veterans, where does that fit in? What's your perspective on the significance of their stories compared to the other work you've done as a journalist?
Since I served myself, I feel that there are many stories to be told, but many veterans have served their country, and I've discovered once they have left the military, they're still helping their fellow veterans, whether it's belonging to the Veterans of Foreign Wars, the American Legion, the disabled American veterans. They're continually reaching out to fellow veterans who may be still serving, or even the community, to let the community know this is what we do, and this is, you know, we're here to help. And we're seeing more and more veterans now going into politics of thinking they can make a difference.
You've mentioned the Honor Flight a couple times, and all the proceeds of your book are going to support the Honor Flight and allowing more veterans to have this experience. I'm just imagining that must have been a moving experience for you to go with these veterans to Washington, D.C., and gave you a perspective on how much it means to your fellow veterans.
It does. One of the things I was able to discover on the first Honor Flight in 2017 was once they realized I was a fellow veteran, it was a lot easier for them to open up and talk to me. And little did I know, that was my very first trip as a participant, but I've covered homecomings and departures. But they surprised me and put me through a situation near the end. What the Honor Flight Nevada does, and I think quite a few of the other Honor Flights do it, near the end of the trip, after everybody has finished their last meal together and, you know, they're chatting, they have mail call. And they have letters written by family members and school kids, you know, other people. So I'm recording and I'm taking photos, and all of a sudden, here comes a packet to me. I go, What's this for? Well, you're a veteran. No, I'm not Vietnam. Yeah, it was a little before my time. No, you're on the trip. So I'm starting to read the letters, and one is from my significant other, another is from my family, another is from my daughter, another is from my daughter-in-law, and it really put things in perspective, just to kind of experience what the veterans, experience. And that's the way, way I look at everything. I never had the opportunity to go to Afghanistan, for example. I was at state headquarters, and because of my military training, they wanted me to stay there and deal with personnel, put together battle books, that type of thing. So I went as a civilian journalist embedded with company-level units in Afghanistan, Nevada soldiers, and I was there on Thanksgiving of 2012 in Camp Phoenix outside of Kabul, and I received a message on Facebook once again from my daughter-in-law saying, we miss you, but you realized it was your duty to be with a servicemen there in Afghanistan, one, to see how they are, but two, to experience the feeling of not being home on a special occasion, which it did give to me. And as we talk about veterans, I hope to channel the stories I did for the paper on my two trips to Afghanistan and put that out there as well.
And that makes me wonder maybe what you've learned that you can share with the rest of us, because there are a lot of people that listen to this that have never served in the military. And one of the reasons we do this program is so people understand the price that's been paid for our freedom. Is there something from talking to these different generations of veterans that you think we all need to understand, or that we would be better off if we really understood?
I think with World War II, we know the sacrifice of war and what it took to defend your country. We had young men, teenage men, who were 16 and 17, and at the first word of the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor and then the declaration of war on both Japan and Germany, we had thousands upon thousands enlisting. Many of the young men were underage. They were 15, and they were trying to forge their birth certificates or have their parents forge their birth certificates so that they could go and serve in war. With Vietnam, the biggest disappointment many Vietnam veterans had was the perception of what they were doing in Vietnam, and then coming home and being accosted at airports of how dare you go over there and kill people and innocent children and that type of thing. Our country is now coming around to accept the fact that many of these men, probably a good majority, had been drafted, and rather than running, they said, yes, I will serve. Some didn't know exactly what they were getting into, but one of the things, and it's true with all wars, but the number of people and the heroism they displayed. I met Doc Ballard two or three years ago. He spoke at a VFW convention in Sparks, Nevada. But he is a Medal of Honor winner, and he was a Navy corpsman, and he told me all about his duty. And it's just, people rise to the occasion, just like Afghanistan and Iraq. And I think the difference there is we had 9/11, and quite a few young men and women and seasoned veterans felt that they had a duty to go and serve. And hindsight is better than foresight. When we started to get involved in late 2011 and or 2001 and 2002, we increased the number of military personnel, and one thing just kind of led to another, and we stayed perhaps longer than we should have. But I've been asked did we do the right thing of completely withdrawing? And I think based on my visits over there as a civilian journalist after I retired, I thought, no, we should have at least some type of presence with the other NATO countries. That way there wouldn't be that gap to where, you know, say the Chinese would come in and occupy the land, or Iran. You know, Afghanistan was a good place to monitor intelligence coming out of Central Russia.
I want to take you back to something you said earlier with regard to your father, because that's pretty frequent feedback over the years with this show, is people will hear a veteran on the program who was in a similar element of the war to their father, who never talked about his service. I mean, most of them never talked, 16 million of them, and most of them never talked about it. Is there something, because of your experience in meeting so many veterans, is there something that if your dad were here right now, you would really want to ask him?
Definitely. I'd like to ask him about his service, especially during World War II, and he was also a call-up for the Korean War as well. I did get a hold of some of his military records, not as many as I want. What's left out, again, is World War II. I know he, you know, received a couple of medals, you know, for the liberation of the Philippines and, you know, the some of the other things. But, you know, I would like to just ask him what went on. But here's something that I found pretty unusual. After he got back home, he was in the Navy Reserve, and then the Air National Guard stood up in Reno, so he joined the Air Guard for about a year or two, and then went back to the Navy Reserve when Korea was called up, when Korea happened, he was called up, and then wound up going to Richmond and you know, working on the ships there, and he never went to Korea, but he was still called up, and you know, little things like that. What did you do in Richmond? What did you do in the Air Guard, for example? And I put 2 + 2 together. My dad grew up in Sparks. The Assistant Adjutant General for Nevada, who retired in 1988, grew up in Sparks, and they knew each other. They were in the Navy Reserve. And I kind of thought, when I went into the Nevada Guard, why is this general kind of taking care of me and saying, if you have any troubles, here's my phone number? Now I know why.
Well, and I don't want to be melodramatic or you know, suggest something that isn't true, but having talked to that other veteran who served on LSTs in the same part of the war, at that stage in the war when kamikazes are frequent, when they're preparing for the invasion of mainland Japan, and if the atomic bomb doesn't drop, that would have been a reality. Have you ever examined some of that and said, boy, if things had been a little different, maybe I wouldn't be here?
Definitely. And not only with my dad, but talking to other sailors and soldiers and Marines who were preparing for that invasion, the estimate that was out there, hundreds of thousands of American GIs and sailors could die in invading the mainland. So, you know, not only me, but maybe the generation of baby boomers, we could have had something a lot different that came out of a war of maybe not so much baby boomers. It could have been a different generation based on what happened in Japan.
Well, I don't want to leave anything out if there's anything else that's important to you, but I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for honoring so many others who have. I hope a lot of people are going to buy this book, Legacies of the Silver State, Nevada Goes to War. How can they do that? If they're listening right now and they want to order the book right now, where do they go?
Probably the best place to go is Amazon.com, and just type in Legacies of the Silver State. And I know that Barnes & Noble online has the book as well. And that's probably the best thing. We have it for sale in various gift stores and bookstores in Northern Nevada, but for your listeners, Amazon would be the best bet.
And I'm going to ask you a real dumb question. Why? Why does it matter? Why is it important that we tell the stories or facilitate the telling of these World War II stories?
We had lived in a very different time back in the 1930s and 40s, and the world was changing. And I think through World War II and those stories, we kind of see how our country changed from being more of an isolationist type of country to more of a world player. And to understand where we are today, we need to go back of what happened during the war. After the war, with your major powers starting to face off and then having the proxy wars like in Korea and Vietnam, and to where we are today with the posturing of Russia against NATO, and you know what's happening with Ukraine. Everything is like it's like a puzzle. We haven't finished the entire mosaic, but we keep putting pieces in to finish the puzzle, and right now we just can't do it. One thing was just how we would talk to one person, and we think of the Pacific or we think of Europe as wide land masses or the sea, and it's you don't expect things to maybe come together in a sense of this person knew that person, or for example, in Wendover, Nevada, I used to live in Eastern Nevada. My former wife and I ran a weekly newspaper while I taught school, and the Wendover Air Base was becoming active again, especially with the jets from Hill Air Force Base in Utah. And I went over there, and I really didn't know much about Wendover, but realized this is where they did the training to drop the atomic bomb. The former adjutant general of the state of Nevada, who's since retired, he went over with his mother on an honor flight a few years ago, and she was a nurse during World War II. She was on Tinian Island and knew Paul Tibbetts. So it's just, we live in a big world, but it's not a big world.
Not in the least. And it gets a little bit smaller every time we get to connect a few dots with veterans here on Hometown Heroes. And it's kind of funny, Steve ends with that story about Wendover and Paul Tibbetts. We're going to hear in the weeks ahead about something else that just happened there this month that I think you'll find pretty special. This book is special, Legacies of the Silver State, Nevada Goes to War. I have the links online at hometownheroesradio.com, but before we sign off, I'll tell you again, you can meet the author, Steve Ranson, in person May 25th in Fallon, Nevada, 6 o'clock at the Churchill County Museum, or at those Honor Flight Nevada events May 28th and 29th in Reno. Again, all that information online. And if you do meet this retired Lieutenant Colonel, make sure to thank him for his 28 years of service to our country. One final thought as we approach Memorial Day next weekend, and we prepare to ponder the supreme sacrifice of all of those Gold Star heroes. May the rest of us live in a way that assigns a value to our freedom that measures up to the price that was paid. Maybe that's a little better way to explain those four words we conclude with every week on Hometown Heroes. Freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.